Good morning. So I guess as a bit of a disclaimer, I'd just like to say that I totally plagiarized this sermon this morning. If you weren't aware, Brother Steve Trammell came and delivered a really good gospel meeting over at West Knox this past weekend. And probably half of you were there for the Friday night one. It's not that one, because that would be kind of monotonous maybe, but the one he did on Saturday night particularly hit me and realized that I had a lot of work to do in this particular area. And I thought maybe it's something that we could all learn from. And so this morning, I'd like to talk for a few minutes about our money. You know, this is a kind of a sensitive thing. Most of us are pretty sensitive about how we justify where we put our money, what we do with our money. Go ahead and look over at Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, verse 15. And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Some translations read, "Every form of greed." Beware of every form of greed. You know, what we own does not, you know, that's not what we're comprised of. That's not what matters in our life. What we own, how much money we have, none of that matters. You know, we talked about justifying what we purchase. You know, how many of us go out and buy a car or a computer or something that costs a lot of money? You're going to have all sorts of reasons for why you bought the one that you did. You know, if you spend $20,000 on a Ford Fiesta, you probably have a reason for that. Or if you spend $2,000 on an old 1976 GMC without any floorboards, you're probably going to know, you're going to have a reason why you bought that. Maybe it doesn't make sense to everybody else, but you have your reasons. You know, and if you think about it, even if they're justified, you know, maybe we need to look at our justifications again. You know, make sure we're doing what we should. If you think about all the time that we spend in our days thinking about money, you know, it's hard not to think about money. From the time our day starts to the time our day ends, something involves money every single day. You know, we think about just shopping. You know, I've gone with Hannah while she's gone clothes shopping, which is like pulling teeth. You know, you go and she's going through the mall and she's got to try everything on, and you kind of have to be close by so that she has that little bit of companionship. And yet, I don't want to go in there at all, you know. So I'm sitting on those uncomfortable benches in Westtown Mall, just kind of, you know, pondering things and people watching. You know, they have benches in there for people like me because they know that shopping is such a big, you know, a big thing. And, you know, I pick on Hannah for clothes shopping. I like to go and look at, you know, tools at Home Depot. You know, I could sit there and drool on that a lot longer than she would go clothes shopping maybe. And actually, that's not true. I can do it still pretty quick. But, you know, they don't even have benches in Home Depot. So, you know, so we go shopping a lot. You think about gambling. Most of us here probably don't have a problem with gambling. But I bet you every one of us has had coworkers that when this, remember that last Powerball that happened? That huge Powerball. People who don't even typically play the lottery were like, "Hey, I'm going to go get it. You know, I'm going to go get a ticket," and they're plotting and scheming what they would do with all this money. "I'm going to build a mansion, you know, on the lake or somewhere, get me a nice yacht and cruise around on Lake Loudoun." You know, we're thinking about what we can do with that money, right? You know, we think about giving gifts. Think about all the money we spend on giving gifts, like for wedding showers or baby showers or Christmas, right? The most wonderful time of the year. Do you think it's because, you know, people go to church an extra weekend, you know, and they can't go to church the rest of the year? Or is it maybe that the commercialization of Christmas is, you know, all the gift-giving and gift-getting, you know? That's probably what makes it the most wonderful time of the year. And, you know, sometimes we don't even need a holiday to do that. I'll just give a gift to myself today. You know, I deserve a break. I'm gonna treat myself today. You know, I've done that. You know, I've worked hard this year. I'm going to buy something exorbitantly expensive so that I can feel better about it. You know, sure. Or we think about our wages, you know, the money we make at work. I remember when I first started working at Food City several years ago, I got my first pay stub. And I'm thinking, cool, I work this many hours, I get this much money an hour, so my paycheck should be this. And I open it up, and that's not right. You know, there's some money missing here. You know, it's not what we think it should be. We think, I'm sweating too much, I should be making a lot more money than $7.25 an hour pushing these buggies. You know, we think about our wages. We think about our investments, maybe. You know, we're constantly scanning that computer, the little chart, as it goes up and goes down, you know, what our investments into the market are doing. And we think about our taxes, right? That's the unpleasant part. That's the reason my wages weren't what they should have been when I started out at Food City. Is the taxes, the withholdings. Where does that money go? What slice does the government take off? So we make decisions and think about money all day long, all the time. And it's hard not to think about it. So, you know, how much time are we spending on thinking about money? Luke chapter 12, I'd like to read this little story here. We read one verse. I'd like to go back and look at this story more in depth here. Let's start in verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Now think about this guy right here. You know, he asked Jesus this question, and he's probably completely expecting a response like, yeah, he's going to make my brother give me the money from my inheritance. You know, have you ever thought about meeting Jesus? Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever thought about if you could go back in time, you know, and see Jesus, you know, what that would be like? And what would you ask him? You know, there's so many questions that we probably have that we would want to ask him. And, you know, Jesus has a reputation by this point, and this guy comes up and he says, "Hey, Jesus, tell my brother to give me my money." You know, that's what was important to this guy. If he was thinking about other things, he might have asked him, you know, some philosophical question or something about his religion. Instead, what he was thinking about was his money. He was thinking about, you know, his parents had died, and he's thinking about getting that inheritance, getting that fair shake. You know, and we already looked at how money, you know, it doesn't matter. The things we own doesn't make us. That stuff doesn't matter. So why would we spend that much time thinking about things that don't end up mattering in the end? Why would we want to be like this guy who's constantly thinking about it, you know, constantly looking down the road, right? That's what we do. We make plans we have a vision of where we want to be in 5 to 10 years, the things that we want to own, probably. I do. You know, I want to have a little place, you know, with my little toys, my man toys somewhere, and you know, one day I'd like to have some land and do this or that. And we have a vision, don't we, of the things that we want to have later on down the road. We're thinking about it. That's what matters to us. But here's a question for you. What if you were never going to get any new clothes? You were never going to have a better car? You know, you were never going to have a bigger house? What if none of those things ever happened? What if what you had right now was what you were going to have the rest of your life? Would you be happy? Or would we be miserable? And that's a question that when I heard this lesson, I thought, ooh, you know, I got to think about that. You know, because I have problems with that. You know, and you think, well, my car is pretty bad. You don't want me to own this thing for very long. I might be stuck on the side of the road one day, you know, changing a tire, you know, swapping an engine, yeah, on the side of the road. And, you know, but really, what if that was all you had for the rest of your life? And let's look at Philippians chapter 4. Philippians chapter 4. Paul has some really good words for us here. Verse 11 beginning. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know, this Philippians 4:13 is the verse that they have the Superman shirts on. You know, they kind of give us like Christ is my superpower type thing. But if you look at the context here, Paul's using that as saying, you know, I'm not worried about all this stuff. What I've got right now, the things that I have or the things that I don't have, I'm fine with that. I've got what I need because I have Jesus. You know, all of us here either have Jesus or have that opportunity readily available. We don't have to worry about those things. The things we've got right now, you know, we can eliminate that worry over money. All these shopping, gambling, you know, the gift giving, all that. We don't have to worry about it because we have Jesus. Let's look over at Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. And this is a story that's probably pretty familiar to us. The rich young ruler, right? Some other guy. You know, not anybody that I can relate to, right? This is the rich young ruler. I don't have anything in common with him, right? But I think we'll find that we typically blow this passage off, I think. Even in the church, I think we kind of eliminate its power. But it's important to really let it sink in. Let's begin in verse 16. Now behold, one came and said to him, Good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? And so he said to him, Why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. He said to him, Which ones? Jesus said, You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. Honor your father and your mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The young man said to him, All these things I have kept from my youth. What do I still lack? Jesus said to him, If you want to be perfect, go, sell what you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come, follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Then Jesus said to his disciples, Assuredly I say to you that it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. When his disciples heard it, they were greatly astonished, saying, Who then can be saved? You know, we think about this passage. We think about, you know, this rich young ruler, and we kind of compartmentalize it somewhere else. You know, like, whoa, let's not get crazy here. You know, he wasn't really saying to everyone, you know, go give everybody, go sell what you've got and give to the poor. And we'll spend a long time. We'll spend probably longer coming up with justification for keeping our stuff than if we just read the passage and let it do its work. You know, he's saying that our love of money, our attitude towards money has moral implications. You know, it matters. He's comparing the same stuff, our attitude towards money, with murder and committing adultery and lying. All these things, our attitude towards money. You know, most of us can probably go through our lives without committing murder, or, you know, maybe we have a harder time with lying, but most of us here probably do a pretty good job of being honest. You know, most of us can stay out of doing something, you know, sexually immoral for most of our lives. But how easy is it to fall into this trap of money, to start loving money, and how we just, you know, how we have a hard time parting with it, how we're thinking about it constantly. In this society, it's hard not to do. But, you know, that's why Jesus told this rich young ruler, you know, to sell what he had and give to the poor. He realized he had an issue with that. So, hey, I see you like money too much. Why don't you go sell that and give to the poor? By doing that, he's laying up treasure in heaven by giving it away here. You know, that's Jesus' point here. And we shouldn't disarm this really powerful story just willy-nilly like that by saying, well, you know, he's not saying that to everybody. Well, is he? Or if by even asking that question, we're kind of admitting we have a problem with it, don't we? I've done that to this story. I have. And you know, in economics, you know, I'm in construction science now, hopefully graduating in May. But I have a business minor that goes with my degree, and so I have to take all these business classes that I don't really like very much. And one of them was economics. And in economics, you learn it's kind of, you know, where do people spend their money? But there's an opportunity cost to every purchase you make. There's an opportunity cost. And that means, so let's say you have $1.50 and you want to go buy yourself a Coke at the vending machine. Well, if you actually go through with it and buy a Coke, you know, with $1.50 at the vending machine, that means that you couldn't spend it on the Dr. Pepper that's also $1.50 in the, you know, in the vending machine. You've lost that. You can't do both. Or if you spend your time doing one thing, you've taken away time from doing something else. If you spend money doing one thing, you've taken it away from doing something else. So when we think about spending money maybe needlessly on the things that we just would like to have, you know, how are we going to be able to help the poor? What if you, you know, just spent $100 at some antiques fair? We have an antiques fair in Clinton. Cash is king there. What if you just spent $100 on some old thing that probably doesn't even work anymore, and then you see a guy who's, you know, down on his luck, just busted a tire and he needs something, or he, you know, he's looking for groceries or something. And you go, oh yeah, sure, let me just help you. Oh, sorry, I just spent it on this thing that doesn't work anymore. You know, that's an opportunity cost. You know, you've taken that money and spent it on one thing, and now you can't use it for somebody else. It's just something to think about as we go forward. Let's look at Galatians chapter 2. Galatians chapter 2. Verse 10, they desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I also was eager to do. And you'll see in Deuteronomy 15, you know, 7 through 11, we won't read that now, but, you know, even God in his law to the Israelites was very concerned about taking care of the poor. It's our duty. You know, it's our duty with that money that, you know, at least I do. I have a problem with spending it on me, me, me. Let's look back over at Luke chapter 12. You know, our life as Christians is not a life of acquiring things. It's a life of learning to part with what we already have. You know, that's what it's all about, is learning to part with what we already have. Let's look at, we'll keep reading. This is after what we've already read. We'll keep reading from verse 16 on. Then he spoke a certain parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. You know, we all know this parable. It's the parable of the rich fool. You know, he focused on himself and wasn't worried at all about godly things. You know, when we wake up in the morning, what is our motivation for getting out of bed and going to work, doing what we do every day? What is our motivation? You know, from the time we're small, you realize money has power. You know, you can do stuff with money. You can help get stuff with money. I remember I would really scrimp and save when I was probably 10 or 11. I really wanted a PlayStation 2. All my friends had PlayStation 2s. It was the coolest thing to have. I never, you know, I didn't have one, and so I wanted one, and it was like $200, which to me was might as well have been $1 million. And so I saved and saved and saved my Christmas money and any money I made working around the house with my dad, and I finally got it, you know, and you think about it, even from a small age, I was thinking about that kind of thing. And when we think about our motivation, what's our motivation for going to school? Okay, we're small, it's the law, okay, you got to go to school. But then you get out of elementary school and high school, and okay, guess again, you're going back to school. Now, well, what's your motivation for going to school? You go so you can get a nice job, right? A nice job that you can earn a lot more money than if you didn't go to school. And then you do all that so that when you get old, you have all this money that you can sit back and just coast for a while, right? That's what society teaches us to do. That's just the norm. Nobody questions it. We save up all this money so that we can sit and do nothing for 10 to 15 years. Just as a, you know, society in general. You know, sit and be lazy for 10 to 15 years. That's the, and I'm not saying that the retired folks in this room do that. That's not what I'm saying. I know Gene is busier now than he ever has been. So, but think about it. So, we've read this parable about the rich fool. That's kind of what he did. He's like, okay, gonna kick back. I've stored up all my stuff now. You know, that's the same idea. My dad, you know, he, for those of you who don't know, he helped raise money for 4-H, a program that teaches agriculture and leadership qualities to young people. And he would often have to go and meet with donors and talk with them about where they wanted their money put, you know, maybe if it was to go for a new 4-H camp or something like that. And sometimes he would also deal with money from wills. You know, somebody had died and they wanted their estate or a portion of their estate to go towards, you know, something, some 4-H camp or a program. And we think, oh, what a noble thing they did, you know. What a noble thing they did, willing their estate away to this. And you think, well, they're dead. They don't care where that money goes. You know, how noble is it when you're not even using that money anymore? You can't use it. You don't care about that anymore. And that's not the only example. There are other examples. But you can't take it with you. You know, even though they donated that money away to a good place, they couldn't take it with them anyway. You know, we're going to leave it here. And it's going to become somebody else's. He said, whose things are these going to be now? They're not yours. They're somebody else's. Let's look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. Beginning in verse 6. Now godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into a temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. You know, if we have Jesus, if we have God, that's all we need. He's going to take care of us. We don't have to sit and stew on these things. I have a tendency to be a bit of a worrywart anyway about other things. You know, one of the great powers about God is that He liberates us from our worry, whatever it is. You know, if it's somebody's sick, one of our loved ones is sick, well, we have prayer. You know, or anything. If we're worried about money, He says God's going to take care of you. Godliness with contentment is great gain. We don't have to worry about that. He can liberate us from that fear and worry over money. So then, I guess the last three points I've got, you might say these are kind of biblical principles for our use of money, and I thought these were pretty helpful when I heard them myself. So the first one would be, as with regards to our money, share it. Share our money. Let's look at Acts chapter 10. Acts chapter 10, beginning in verse 3. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw clearly in a vision an angel of God coming and saying to him, "Cornelius." And when he observed him, he was afraid and said, "What is it, Lord?" So he said to him, "Your prayers and your alms have come up for a memorial before God." I want you to think about that for a minute. Cornelius, a Gentile, you know, it says his prayers and his alms went up to God as a memorial. When you think about that, we think about prayers ascending to God all the time, right? We think about that. But think about it from God's perspective. He sees this coming up towards him. His alms, the stuff he gives to people, the stuff he gives to the poor, he sees that. God sees that as a memorial to Cornelius. He's not even a Jew. You know, and God sees that coming up before him. How powerful is that? You know, so when we're getting our paychecks in, I think something that would be helpful for us to do is, you know, instead of looking at it and go, okay, all this is mine. You know, just look at it and just immediately in your head, just decide that a lot of that is, or some of that is going to go to, you know, somebody who needs it. Share it with somebody. Then second, we need to save it. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16. We need to save our money. First Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. So here the idea is you save so that you haven't spent everything you've given, you know, you've earned. You haven't just spent it all right off the bat. You've got something to give to somebody if they need it, right? If we're supposed to share it, how can you do that if you've already blown it on something? You know I've done that before. Yay, money, and burns a hole in your pocket and it's gone. You know, we need to save our money. And then thirdly, we need to spend our money. Let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Verse 18. Here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink, and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives him, for it is his heritage. You know, if we have a good job and we're making money, we're sharing it, we're saving it, you know, it's okay to spend that money. You know, that's what it's for. God has given that to you to spend, to enjoy. You know, do you know any of those people who just, every dollar they spend, they like kind of feel it? You know, they're kind of just like, ooh, I got to spend money. Like even if it's a Coke at a restaurant or something, you know, they're not just blowing money away. They feel so guilty about it. And I've done that, you know, like, well, I'm trying to save for this, when realistically I have this money I've been saving all this time. You know, I'm not hurting for it. I can, you know, go out with my friends at lunch and buy something. That's not going to kill me. So, you know, Solomon here, he's saying, if you've earned this, you know, and you're sharing it, you're saving it, it's okay to spend it. You know, maybe not as fast as it's coming in, that's not what I'm saying, you know, but it's okay to spend it. That's what it's for. God has given it to you to use. So I hope this has been beneficial to you. It was for me. I needed to hear it when I heard it. So now you're all going to rush home and go listen to the recording of Steve do it and watch him blow me out of the water. But I do encourage you, though, if you have a few moments, it's worthwhile to listen to it. He, of course, brings some things that, you know, I couldn't do here. So just a few thoughts on money that were helpful for me. We always like to offer an invitation to those who like to accept it, whether you haven't begun your walk with God now or you have and you need the prayers of the saints for whatever reason it might be, whether you're having struggles or you've fallen away, whatever it may be, you can do that now as we stand and as we sing.